a lot of actually high achieving women, women that have like super high standards of themselves. Every area in their life, they're successful, except when it comes to food and their body. It is the one thing that they just struggle with controlling. And that's why they use food or exercise as a means to kind of work it out, but they can never get it right. And then of course we do get these attachments to our bodies, you know, when, especially what's hard is when someone says to you, oh my God, you look so good. You look great. Have you lost weight? And if you have, and it's from an unhealthy manner, guess what continues? The unhealthy manner for that validation, you know, and the other person who's saying you look great has no idea, but that's what can drive, you know, these continuous behaviors, because they're like, that's the only way they know how to look this way.
Welcome to The Body Never Lies. I'm your host, Leela Lutz. Each week, myself and experts from around the world help you uncover the secret ways your body communicates with you to empower you in your own individual health journey.
From anorexia to world champion athlete, Hattie Boydell's journey will challenge everything you think you know about fitness, body image, and committing to your goals. In this eye-opening episode of The Body Never Lies, Hattie shares raw truths about the fitness industry, bucks myths about women's training, and reveals how she found freedom through flexible dieting. Whether you're a seasoned athlete or just starting your fitness journey, Hattie's insight on building a strong body and mind will inspire you to redefine your relationship with food, exercise, and self-love. Tune in for a dose of tough love, practical wisdom, and the motivation to become your strongest self inside and out. Hattie Boydell, world-class athlete. I look at you online and I just find you so inspiring. You're an amazing trainer, coach, speaker, presenter, athlete, but you weren't always. How did you get here? Where did you come from?
Well, you made me quite emotional just sharing that introduction. I feel very grateful. Thank you so much. I've been in the industry for a long time. Well, I've been an athlete my whole life. So a little bit about me. I've been in the fitness industry for 17 years. I've been weight training for 18 years. And before that, I was an elite gymnast for 9 years. And so when I look at how much training I've done in my entire life, out of the 35 years that I've been on this planet, 27 years has been dedicated to intense training. I spent most of my life being an athlete before I've been anything else. And, you know, just like most people, we have our swings and roundabouts. We go through some pretty hard times. And, you know, the thing I always say is that hard times build character. And it was a period in my life when I was in my teenage years that I developed some pretty unhealthy habits, which I think we all can relate to in some way. I developed anorexia. Severe anorexia, where I was hospitalized. I weighed 28 kilos, which is literally less than what I weigh now. I look back then, I can't even imagine, you know, doing that again. That was a lot of work. God, I think comp prep is hard. try being anorexic. But, you know, it was a really, really tough time in my life. And I'm so grateful for that time because it taught me how powerful my mindset was. A lot of people ask me what was the catalyst for change, and honestly it was being in hospital and looking around and seeing all these other women suffering, and I thought, what the, am I allowed to swear, fuck have I done? I was like, what the fuck is going on here? In two ways. One, like, what have I done? And then, you know, what are we absorbing that has driven us to be in this situation? Like I always say, I'm strong enough to suffer. I'm strong enough to suffer, but I can't let other people suffer. And so being in like my darkest moment where I was like, holy shit, I'm not here by chance. I'm here by choice. I'm here from all the choices that I made consistently over and over and over again from the moment I woke up, from the moment I went to sleep, that I landed in this position that I'm here. And I had this kind of moment where I was like, fuck, how do I get out? It was like, I can't live like this. And something about me is I don't like to be told what to do unless I've asked for help. And being in hospital, I was told when I was going to eat, what I was going to eat, couldn't see my family. It was just like, it was a nightmare. I was like, this is hell to me. And it was a catalyst for change. It was like, all right, how do I get out? And that was a really like easier said than done. Like I got it. I got out. But it really was this moment where I was like, if I can nearly kill myself, because I actually ended up in emergency hospital, if I can nearly kill myself, well, then I can probably do some amazing things if I channel it in a healthy direction. And I never thought I was going to be in the fitness industry. And I, like I said, I've been in the industry for 17 years, 18 this year. And it was in that moment that I was like, how do I help these girls? Like, what do I have to do to help myself to ultimately help these people, or to help these people and ultimately help myself? Because I can't take people down a path I don't know. And so when I finally got healthy and I got out of hospital and I said to my parents, I'd like to do my PT course. And I enrolled, I was 17 years old. I enrolled into my PT course. And 2 days after I turned 18, I started working at one of the most prestigious fitness first clubs in the city. And I was really grateful. I was surrounded by wonderful mentors, really amazing trainers who literally looked at me and were like, oh, she's the weak link. better educate this one. And I was really lucky that I was around, you know, some really great people who wanted me to be better, so that as a team, we were the best team essentially in the city across the fitness first. And that kind of was the start of my trajectory into the fitness industry. And I couldn't imagine doing anything else. Like, I actually don't think I know how to do anything else, you know? So I'm very grateful for this time. It taught me a few things. One, how powerful my mindset was. Two, how fucking resilient this body is. Like, I don't know if I would have the same love and appreciation for this incredible machine, this vessel that I get to do life in, that I can pretty much train it to do anything, you know, over time. You know, I don't think I would have noted, I would have known what that was like without that really, really hard moment, hard time in my life. And I don't wish it upon anyone. We don't have to, you know, pain is an amazing motivator, but it can't be the motivator forever. And in the beginning, it was a big motivator for me, but eventually it became my ceiling. So I had to, you know, go through the transition of starting to love myself and have self-compassion and empathy and, you know, change not good enough into, well, how can I be great? You know, what's the greatest of myself look like? Like, what is she and how she speaks to herself, how she shows up for herself? And I couldn't have done, I didn't do that on my own. Like, I did need help. And this is why our environment is really important. Who we spend our time with, mentors, you know, even from our phone. So many people live their life through their phone. Who are you letting mentor you? Who are you letting influence you? Because our greatest influences are people, which is pretty powerful.
Can I ask you, for the audience and for myself, who you, when you see someone with anorexia, you think it's about being thin. Is that what it is?
No, that's a byproduct. So, I mean, I can only speak from my experience. Everyone's got different reasons as to why they go through anorexia. Mine was a not good enough thing. Mine was a control thing. I often think about death in a way that's very powerful for me. Not as in like, oh my God, I'm not scared to die. I'm more scared of living a life, not living the life that I know I could lead, than I am dying. But when I was 16, you know, I experienced death for the first time and I really didn't know how to handle it. And I remember thinking, oh my God, life can be taken away from you so quickly. I'm going to make the most out of every day just in case I die early, just in case. And so I went on this like journey of, you know, in my eyes, trying to be the best version of myself, but it became a very controlling version of myself. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to start exercising again, because I'd stopped gymnastics and I was doing all these different sports, but it wasn't consistent. So I was like, I'm going to start going to the gym. I'm going to start looking after my food. I had zero information around nutrition. I just read magazines. And when you're reading those diet magazines from 18 years ago, they are not giving out quality information. I actually learned how to be bulimic from a magazine. Like, this is the thing that I'm like, oh my God, like what was I exposed to at such a young age? And I wasn't the only one. There were millions of people reading these magazines. And I started to be really good at school. So I was kind of naughty for a while, which is probably a big regret. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to study after school. I'm going to sit at the front. I'm not going to sit with my friends. Like, I literally was like, I'm going to be this perfect human being. And I remember getting ready for an English speech, which, I share that my fear of public speaking comes from this moment. But I worked really hard for this speech, and I failed the speech. I remember I had the teacher that I was doing the presentation in front of. Unfortunately, I didn't have a very good relationship with. I'd been pretty naughty in her previous classes. And we already had a bit of a head-butting history. And I was like, I'm a changed person. I've been really good. And I failed the speech. And then I remember saying to myself, well, no matter what you do, you're just not good enough. No matter what you do, you're just not good enough. And so that kind of spiraled me down into, I had to be deserving or earn the right to do essentially privileges, which was just eating. And I had to do more of what I did the day before, not the last week. You know, we talk about progressive overload in a positive way of doing a little bit more each week. Mine was, you got to do more the next day. You know, so what went from a 30-minute run turned into 40, 50, 60, an hour and a half. Like, it was, and then if I was tracking calories, it was like 400, 500, 600. And it was like more. I couldn't do less. I could do as much. But if I did more, that meant the next day, I've got to match that. And so it became this very unhealthy obsession with trying to control everything, because I was like, well, I've got to be the best version of myself. So doing less isn't the best version of myself. You know, so it became what started off as a positive intention turned very much into a negative one. And there were parts of me that kind of knew what I was doing was wrong, because I was so exhausted and, you know, I was breaking down friendships and, you know, people getting worried about me, but I just really didn't know how to stop. And that was a really challenging time for me. And that's kind of how it, like, you know, my eating disorder started. And so it wasn't about being skinny, although there did become a body obsession. You know, it was like, I was so skinny, I couldn't fit into size 6. I had kids' clothing. Like, it, and no matter what you say, and no matter what you know, it kind of doesn't change anything. It didn't change anything for me. You know, so the only reason I went into hospital was because my mom was meant to go and take my grandparents away to Germany. He just recovered from cancer. And that was meant to be his big celebration. You know, you're healthy, let's go travel, let's see the world. And my mum said to me, I can't go, I've got to look after you. And I remember feeling so selfish. I became a liar. I was manipulative. I was all these qualities that I dislike in human beings. Like, it was so different from my true character, but I just wanted to be like left alone and isolated. And, you know, I just wanted to keep doing what I was doing. Couldn't go to school anymore. And I just said to my mom, Mom, I will only go to hospital if you go away with your dad. Because I just felt so bad that I was the reason she couldn't go with her dad, who just recovered from recovered from cancer. So that was like, that got me in there. But in the beginning, it wasn't about being skinny. It was about control. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, plays a big role in a lot of people with either bulimia or anorexia. They want to control something, but over time it becomes out of control. It becomes something that consumes people. So one of the things that when I spoke to the doctors, you know, a big thing that I owe a lot of my recovery from was that I never associated the disorder with me. I remember saying to my mom, I think I've got schizophrenia. There's this voice in my head and she's telling me to do these things and I can't not listen to her. I know what I'm doing is wrong, but I can't listen to her, mum. And so what my mum and my sister did is we called it FED, fucking eating disorder, right? And so we separated FED from Hattie. So it's interesting now that I've done a lot of psychology work. I work with a neuropsych for 6 years. And something that came up when I was working with all of these specialists was, I think it's David Segal who talks about parts, the part system. And he actually got that from his eating disorder clients because they'd say, there's a part of me. There's a part of me. And I would say that, there's a part of me, mum. She's so strong. And so the ability to disassociate this part of me from who I was the reason that over time I could separate the thought and the action. And then I became obsessed with parts models, which I still am to this day. So you often hear me saying, oh, my athlete part, my coach part, my nurturer part. And that's because we are a sum of all parts.
Yeah.
And when we want to start to shift parts of our behaviors, we have to get to know what part we're in. So I know I've gone down a bit of a rabbit hole there. Once you ask me a question, I can't stop. But I hope that was helpful in terms of my explanation of a little bit about the past.
No, it's really helpful. I've had that. I've worked with a few girls with eating disorders and that has come up. In matrix therapies, we call it a shadow self and it is a part, but we call it a shadow self because there's no light on that part. It's a dark side of the self and being able to disassociate that part is really powerful. Mm. One of my clients actually, she was so obsessed with cutting food in the day. She actually had a part of her that would take her to the fridge in the middle of the night. She would sleepwalk and go to the fridge.
Interesting.
And she actually came to see me because she wanted me to help her with this part that was like her husband had put locks on the fridge and all sorts of stuff. When we got to it, this is actually the real her. It was the other part that was driving her in the day to starve herself. She was actually anorexic and she didn't even realize. And there was this part of her that was trying to save her and go to the fridge at night and eat her. It's like the other part's
isn't
asleep.
That wild?
It's so crazy, isn't it? It's so wild. So it's, I really wanted you to share that because I don't want people to have this judgment on anorexic people or people with eating disorders about it being about the way you look. Because I've actually never met someone with an eating disorder who was about that, like just as simple as that, right?
I think there's always layers to it. And look, and this is the thing. For some people, it is the way they look. You know, for some people, and I've worked with so many people, so many thousands of women over the last 18 years, and some of it does come down to the way they look. But it's not always just about that. And I think for a lot of actually high achieving women that have like super high standards of themselves, every area in their life, they're successful, except when it comes to food in their body. It is the one thing that they just struggle with controlling. And that's why they use food or exercise as a means to kind of work it out, but they can never get it right. And then, of course, we do get these attachments to our bodies. You know, when especially what's hard is when someone says to you, oh, my God, you look so good. You look great. Have you lost weight? And if you have, and it's from an unhealthy manner, guess what continues? The unhealthy manner for that validation, you know. And the other person who's saying you look great has no idea. But that's what can drive, you know, these continuous behaviors because they're like, that's the only way they know how to look this way. Mm-hmm. And there's one of the most common things that we experience as coaches is the mismatch between output and intake, right? And it is so hard to unclaw the relationship with food or the belief system with food. And it reminds me of, you know, when cats, like their claws, they claw into like a pen or like a couch and you got to like, and like pull them off and it's like, and like, you got to unclaw one at a time. That's my analogy of working with someone and their belief system around food and their relationship with our food over time to give them a new foundation to grow from.
So a really interesting, well, a couple of things I want to say there, but what I notice now is just really dangerous is TikTok and social media.
I'm not on TikTok. Get me away from
it. I know.
That.
I've never been on TikTok either, but a friend was telling me the other day, she has a friend whose daughter's anorexic, and she actually posts pictures of herself, videos of herself on TikTok, and people comment on how thin she is and how beautiful that makes her. So I think about this, and you being inspired, in air quotes, by those magazines to take that route. Like, it for young girls now, it must be just so much worse because you're getting that instant gratification with people commenting on, oh, I can see your hip bones. That's amazing. Like,
my heart, my stomach.
And men commenting on it as well. Like, it's, please, I mean, everyone listen, don't let your daughter go on TikTok.
Look, this year, from my own challenges, I've really questioned what the fuck is going on with humanity.
Mm.
Something I'm currently working through. And I'm not on TikTok for the reason that I don't want another platform to expose myself to that isn't going to improve my life. Like, we are not doing ourselves any servicing. Like, and, you know, people often ask me, do I want kids? And my answer is, at the moment, no, because I'd like to think I'm doing the best that I can. I'm not a perfect human being. I have integrity, though. I have, you know, morals. I care. I'm conscious. Still not perfect. Still make mistakes. Put my hand out there loud and clear. But I don't know if I'm a strong enough influence to shape my child more than what social media can, or other kids and other kids and their belief systems based off their parents and their belief systems. And, you know, and I hear about, you know, friends of their kids, you know, going through really hard times, their kids 10 years old saying, oh, I'm fat. My heart just breaks, you know, and we go through our own challenges. We go through our own journey and we all learn. They have to learn or they don't. That's a choice, right? Whether we choose to learn, and this is what I speak to a lot of women, it's like, is that at the end of the day, we are our own responsibility, and what we choose is up to us. So if you want to keep living that way, that's totally fine, but that's your responsibility and you're going to take everything that comes along with that, or you make the decision to change. And change is scary because it's the unknown, and comfort for a lot of people wins. Mm-hmm. We know this. Comfort in habits, comfort in relationships, right? Comfort in language. And until the pain of staying the same becomes too much, people won't change. Like, pain is one of the greatest motivators for change. But again, it can't be the only motivator, and it can't be the motivator forever. At some point, you know, it sounds so cliche, but it's not, like, we only grow through love. Like, love yourself enough to change. Love yourself enough to know that if you take the actions over and over again, you create something powerful. Like I said, I wasn't there by chance. I was there by choice. And then the flip side, I'm here right now because of the choices that I've continued to make for the last 10 years, where I've really empowered myself, you know, through my habits, through my behavior, through changing language, changing my rules. If you change the rules, the game changes. What game do you want to play in life? Well, fuck me. I want a great life. I don't fear dying. I fear not living a life that is as fulfilling as I know it can be. And that comes down to how I am.
Mm.
We all have a choice. What choices are you making?
So in your sport, you're the best in the world. How many world titles have you won now?
I actually only have one world title. I've got an interesting story about this.
Oh, tell me.
So in 2016, I wrote on my huge calendar, like a big calendar, like as big as this wall, world champion. And I looked at that every single day. And I showed up training 6 days a week, tracking my nutrition. I did everything. I visualized myself on stage. I did everything I could have possibly done. And that year, I beat the four-time world champion, Andre Rozier, who still to this day is one of my biggest inspirations. And it was the weirdest moment beating your inspiration. The next day I saw her and I was like, I said to her, I'm so sorry. Like, I was just like, I felt so bad. I was just like, I'm so sorry. Like, it was the weirdest experience for me. But something that I also experienced was, I was like, I won it. And I noticed that the first thing I said to myself was, well, really, were you really good enough?
Wow.
Were you really good? Were you really better than her?
Wow.
When people would say, you're the champion, I'd get like this really uncomfortable feeling like, are you just saying that to me? Like I didn't let myself experience I am the champion. And the year after, when I went to defend my title, I lost it. And I haven't got it back since. And this is what, 2016, this is a long time ago. And I thought to myself, oh my God, I just robbed myself. And it's interesting because it wasn't until I lost the title that I was like, but you are a champion. You did everything that you said you would do. You showed up as a champion. Like, and every year that I've come back to go for the title, I've told myself, I'm a champion. I'm a champion. I'm a champion. And I still haven't won the world title yet. I won Miss America, Miss Europe. I've got two American titles, Miss Europe and Miss Australia. So I've won other titles outside of the world titles, but I haven't won the world title again. But since that moment, I've still told myself I'm a champion because I know how I show up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that I had to literally go, like, rob myself of that title the year that I had it to go, hold on. You are that. You embody a champion. You embody an athlete. So even though I don't win, I still don't go, well, you're not a champion anymore. I still tell myself I'm a champion.
You're a champion to me.
Yeah. So, you know, I learn the hard way. Honestly, it kills me. And I can laugh about it because I'm like, damn it. Like, you know, but that's a really interesting story. And I share it because at the end of the day, we are ultimately in control of what we experience, right? The stories that we tell shape our experience. And something from that moment, from that year, I said to myself, how do I improve my experience of myself? Because I literally just robbed myself. No one else could have done it. Everyone else was telling me I'm a champion. And I couldn't believe it till I lost it. And then I was like, hold on. I embody what a champion is. Win or lose, I show up. Hard days or not, I show up. I always come back. I've failed many times, but I haven't failed. You know, it's like, that's actually a part of learning and getting it wrong so you can get it right eventually.
Do you think, now I've wanted to ask you this question, because I think there's a lot of judgment, but people could listen to your story and go, but how do you just, haven't you just turned all of that control from your anorexia?
Yeah.
How many just turn that into something else that looks healthy?
Well, yeah, I get that all the time. And I love this.
Bet you.
Because like I said before, your intention drives your experience of something. And, you know, to be the best in the world, if you want to be the best athlete, if you want to earn a ridiculous amount of money, if you want to be the top, at the top of your career, guess what you have to be? Obsessive at the craft. You cannot achieve self-mastery or the highest level of any sport, of any career, of making money, of anything, without some level of obsession. And the thing about my obsession is I've always worked out, how do I do this? Look, comp prep to the end extreme is not healthy, but I've done it as healthy as I can. You know, so, you know, I include all food groups. I look at my sleep. I have more rest days now than I ever had before. I'm empowered by my choices. I love what I do. Getting on stage is my least favorite part. I just love
pushing my own boundaries. I've been an athlete my whole life. Wow. I've been curious. You know, like I said, this machine, I want to see what I've got. I want to, and I have to be obsessed with myself to do that. I love what I do. My experience of it is not obsessive. It's self-mastery. It's a craft. Mm. It's curiosity. It's learning. Like, I enjoy that. You don't have to. This is the thing. You don't have to love what I do. Your experience of tracking your nutrition or your experience of training might be obsessive because you know what? That's your intention. The intent drives the experience. My experience of what I've been through has been, how do I empower myself? I don't want to just go through life with a mediocre body or doing mediocre things. I want to do what other people can't do. That's what drives me. At the end of the day, it's my life. I don't want your life. I want my life. That's what I can control. But people are so obsessed with other people. And remember the Me Too thing. Well, if it's obsessive for me, it's obsessive for you. No, no, no. That's just obsessive to you. And so a part of where, as we go through, we navigate life is like, what's my experience? How do I navigate my experience? If you want to enjoy something, learn to find ways of enjoying it. Training morale is something that I teach amongst my Train the Female Athlete courses and my clients. Training morale, what do you love to do? Find joy in the challenge. Well, you're only going to find joy in the challenge if you're loving what you do. You know, so like something I learned from being a gymnast as a child and also anorexia is, fuck me, I'm disciplined. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going for something, you bet I'm going for something. And you know what? I love that. I love my ambition. I love my passion. I love my drive. I love my discipline. I love pushing my own boundaries. Sometimes I hurt myself. And other times I do some pretty amazing things. And I think that's the thing I always think about. It's like, I always remember that comments that are made to me about certain things is never actually about me. It's about them. Mm. And I think that's really hard for us to, as humans, to realize. It's because we always want to feel liked. You know, we always want to feel a part of something. We want everyone to like us. We want everyone to agree with us. We never want to be wrong. But the truth is, we're all so different. You know, we're all very different in what we want to accomplish in life.
So much so. And I think this has almost also got worse, right, with social media, because you're constantly looking at other people and how they live their life. And, you know, it comes back to what I was talking about before. So many women are actually find that physique confronting, find how much you train and the level you'll go to and the result of your physique. They find that confronting. Mm. But again, that's just your experience, right?
Mm.
Like for me, because we work in the same industry and I know how fucking hard it is for you to create what you've created, I just think that's amazing. And I think, would I want that for myself? No, that's not my drive.
I love that you shared that.
It's not my drive. I've got girlfriends who, similar to you, have that. I'm like, do you know what? I don't even have the motivation to train that much. So what am I worried about? But I want people to get this right, because like we were talking about before, your fitness journey, your health journey, your body composition, all of that is going to be made up by what you enjoy, what you love, what you believe in.
Mm.
And that doesn't mean that I can't sit here and go, oh, my God, Hattie looks amazing.
Yeah.
But like,
I love that you shared that. That is so beautiful, because the truth is, we can admire people and not want what they have. You know, when people compare, like if we compare ourselves to other people, there's two things about this. If you're going to compare yourself to someone, make sure you're comparing absolutely everything, right, to that person, not just their good qualities, not just the good things. Compare everything. And on the other side is, you can also look at someone and be like, well, that's incredible, and be like, you know what? I'm not really willing to do that. So I'm just going to admire what you do. I'm going to say, oh, you've got this and I've got that. But you know what? I'm not going to diminish myself for it. I'm just going to say, I'm happy doing this. I'm happy. You know what? I'll maybe want to get halfway there, but I probably don't want to get all the way there. And, you know, a lot of people, they look at me and they'll ask me how long I've been training, or they'll, you know, accuse me of the one that I always get all the time is the accusation of steroids. And I think, you have no idea how long I've been doing this for. Like, if you want to compare yourself to me, make sure you compare my 9 years of elite gymnastics training 32 hours a week. Then make sure you compare my 18 years in the weights room. Then also make sure you compare yourself to my genetics. And then also make sure you compare yourself to my hard work, my discipline, my consistency. Because out of the 18 years that I've been weight training, I've probably had about 6 months off in total from training over 18 years. So unless you want to compare yourself to absolutely every fucking thing that I've done, you're probably not, you should probably shouldn't compare yourself to me. You know, so it's like they see this photo and I'm like, did you see how I was those years ago? Like, there's actually a photo on my social media. My boyfriend brought it up because there was a photo and I found it this morning and I'm going to share it on my story. There's a photo of my progress from 2016, 17, and 18, right? Side by side. And someone wrote on there, are we meant to be impressed by this? And I was like, this is such a great comment. Because as a natural athlete, from year to year, the changes are so minimal for me.
Mm.
But if you took 2016 to now, I get accused of steroids because that's eight years changes. So yeah, I'd hope that there was a little bit of change in there. I've also got much better at dieting. I've got much better at getting conditioned than what I was in. And you know what? I've got 8 years more of more reps under the bar. I've got eight more years of consistency on top of that, you know, that 9 years already or 10 years already of training. So it's like what back then, year to year, it's not impressive, but nearly over a decade, I'd hope that there's some changes. Otherwise I'm not doing a very good job, but apparently I am.
It's I love listening to how long it takes to build that muscle, because women say to me all the time, oh, I don't want to get, like when you know, first come into the gym and do fall, what are your goals? Well, I don't want to get too muscly. I just want to be lean. How many times have women said that to you?
Yes. That's what I say. Like, if you're going to compare yourself to me and the amount of muscle I have, make sure you're comparing myself to the 27 years of being an athlete, you know. And look, some women, this is true, like some women hypertrophy quicker than others and others are really slow. Most of the time the girls that want muscle, unfortunately they get dealt a hand there where genetically it's quite slow. And other girls that don't want to build muscle, there are parts of their body that do hypertrophy. Like, women can build muscle and everyone has a different idea of what beauty is. We're never going to please everyone. We shouldn't. How do you want to be? How do you want to look? What language do you want to use? How do you want to show up in the world? We're so consumed by what other people are doing and what other people look like that we fucking forget.
Mm.
What about, how do I want to be? And you know what? How I want to be is more important than anything else. How I want to look after myself is totally up to me. You know, and you can look like you and I can look like me. And you know what? It's both really beautiful. If I'm a beautiful person, if I'm not hurting anyone, if I'm doing good to myself, if I'm looking after myself, if I'm pushing my boundaries, you know what? I'm going to build my own vessel and I'm going to make it look the way I want to look, muscly or not.
What do you say to the belief and the comment that a lot of therapists or such people will say that you should not give people who've had eating disorders or orthorexia, food logs?
I think it's very individual. There's not a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to rehabbing someone with eating disorders. You know, as you know, I'm a huge, like, the thing that healed me was learning flexible dieting. That healed me. I'm so grateful that I learned how to track my nutrition and I learned that all foods can be incorporated into my diet if I learn to eat things moderately, right? But I have clients who suffer from disordered eating patterns and I don't get them to track. Not yet. We have different tools for different jobs. And I think, again, the intention behind why we do something ultimately drives an experience. So I can put my hand up and say, I love tracking my nutrition because it gave me freedom. I still track my nutrition. I don't have to, but I love it. It gives me freedom. And you know what? I value freedom. That's my experience of it. Whereas other people, if the intent is to control, it becomes what? Controlling, obsessive. So until the driving why is changed, that tool isn't the right job for that person just yet. But on the flip side, learning about food, being able to make informed decisions because you actually know the evidence about food is also, you know, an important piece to learning how to eat. So how do we learn about food if you're not going to learn how to track? So there's so many layers, and maybe there's a couple of different processes in there before we get to that stage. It's individual. In the same way that, you know, if you want to learn about your finances, you're going to have to learn how to track your finances, right? Or how do you know? You don't. Like, you work with an accountant or you work with someone in investing and you learn and they help you through it and you mess up and then you learn and you get, and like, and maybe, you know, when people start crypto and all those things, it becomes obsessive, this high and low, like, and then they got to learn how to stabilize. They got to learn that this thing's going to run in the background. And I'm going to check my investments and I'm going to do this thing. We have to, like, if you want to change something, you have to learn how to change it and the reason why. You know, so when people talk about, oh, intuitively eat, the reason we have an obesity epidemic and people have issues with eating is because they don't know how to intuitively eat. They don't. So that's not the right tool yet. Learn to intuitively eat after you've learned how to track your macros because you know pretty much how much food you can eat and you know about your food. But before that, there's going to be another step in there. So I think, you know, again, when people label things obsessive, that's because that's their experience of it. We hear people's projections of their own experiences, and we get that with exercise, food, okay, belief systems about religion, about the world, fixed mindsets around certain things. Right, we are always coming into contact with people's projections of their own experience. That's what it is.
It's one of my ex-anorexic girls. Her output is that I'm an athlete.
Mm.
And I'm so proud of her. Her food diary, she eats 2,800 calories a day. So she's gone from eating like 1,200 calories a day, 1,000 calorie days, to about 2,800. When she looks at that food log, I know that she feels so proud of herself, that she's fueling herself, you know. It's, and so she was someone who went well with a food log straight away, and it was a total hearing journey for her. She was just like, you know, really explaining that output and input, really teaching her about macros. It gave her the discipline, and I love the word discipline because it comes from the word disciple, right? It gave her the chance to learn about herself and just how much she needed to eat to do all the things that she wanted to do to live her life, because she goes on these amazing trips with her husband and they do all these athletic things. And it's just, it's the way that it's packaged up, right, for that client and what it means to them. And
Look, I obviously don't know your client, and I can only respond from what you shared. There might be, you know, for her, like, yes, she's eating 1,800 calories and yes, it's empowering, but there's probably still a control thing around that. So there's probably still some residue, but at least she's not eating 1,200 calories. She's now eating 2,800. You know, I think the challenge would be what happens when we take the logging away.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that's, you know, that's maybe something else. Like, I can go away for a week and not log my food and I'll stay weight stable because I know exactly how to eat. And I'll still go out and I'll still eat, you know, foods because I want to eat it, but I'll definitely know when I should be stopping because I'm full, what I might need to do the next day to taper off maybe a little too many calories. That's like some navigating. That's like self-coaching. that's something that I had to learn to do because I didn't want to rely on tracking my nutrition. I really went through and I was like, how do I make myself so sound? Like, how do I coach myself? How do I be so equipped with a skill set that if something happened and I couldn't use my phone or I couldn't track my nutrition, I know exactly what to do. That's, you know, once I learned how to track food, I was like, all right, what's the next level for me? Well, my next level is to be able to do this without anything. But I enjoy tracking my nutrition because especially as I'm building my body, I'm always trying to push like how much more can I eat and stay at this weight? How much more can I, you know, the thing about data, everyone, the thing about tracking your nutrition, tracking your progress in the gym, tracking your measurements, doing your photos, if you can step away from it emotionally and look at it as data, you become a scientist to your own body. And do you know what's so fucking cool about that? It's like you learn so much about yourself. You become so curious, you know, so playful, so curious, so like, oh, if I can do that, what can I do next? And what maybe started in the beginning as controlling or like this, you know, kind of rigid or robotic, eventually there should be a little bit of play in there and it goes, well, what could I, you know, like kind of whispers, courage whispers, what could you do?
I love that. I love that you say that because I was talking about this to my, I've talked about this a lot to my followers because I took a year off tracking last year. I didn't track for the whole year and I did not change my body composition at all. Didn't put on weight, nothing. And I always say to people, that's the flexibility and freedom I want for you. And then when I went into this year, I was like, should I diet because I do need to lose some fat or should I put on some muscle? And then I went, you know what? I looked through all my data and I went, I said to myself, I'm going to choose the thing. Don't choose the easy thing. Choose the thing that is hard, right? Push yourself to do the hard thing. Losing weight is easy. I look back and I go, I know exactly how to lose. I lose 4 kilos of muscle and 1 kilo. Oh, sorry, 4 kilos of fat and 1 kilo of muscle.
I was going to say, you haven't done a very good job then.
I know exactly how to do it. Textbook. I can do that again. But every build phase, I've not put on as much muscle as I want to. So you know what? I'm going to build instead. And then actually sitting there tracking, oh, I'm going to really track my training against that. So as I push my carbs up, I really want to focus on just how much more I can push the weight. So you're actually making the connection to the performance. And to come out of training, you're like, oh, my God, that just feels amazing. I eat more carbs. I lift more. You learn, I hear what you're saying with the curiosity and the playfulness. And some people will look at us and go, well, that's obsessive. And I go, well, it's obsessive to me because I work in the fitness industry. Like, I've got an exercise science degree. Like, that's my.
Yeah. That's your background. Yeah.
But whereas yours will be the same, you know, when my accountant does my taxes, she goes, woof, like this, and she gets something right on my spreadsheet. And I look at her like, you're a weirdo. Who gets that excited in a spreadsheet?
Yeah.
If you've been enjoying all the episodes of The Body Never Lies, but you're wondering, Leela, where do I even start with implementing all these great things that I'm learning? Well, I've created something just for you, and I'm so passionate about you getting access to it that I am giving it away for free. The Body Never Lies Insights course helps women over 35 who are sick of all the tests with no answers uncover the root cause of their long list of unexplained symptoms with a scientifically proven self-assessment tool. Over 4 live workshops, I'm going to take you through the assessment that I take every single client through to help them establish where they are truly at with their health. The assessment includes all the things that their doctor and quite a lot of other practitioners, to be honest, have never asked them, and will leave you feeling 100% certain that no, it is not all in your head. Your body never lies. Whether you've been eating clean and self-researching for years, maybe you're sick of giving up all of the different food groups, maybe you've tried a few pro-metabolic approaches and it's made you worse, or even if you've just arrived at a crossroads of knowing you need to do something different for your health and you don't know where to start, this assessment tool is for you. If you want to get this for free, and I probably won't do this again, then head over to thebodyneverlies.com.au and register now. We are starting on January 15, so you can make 2025 your best year yet. Of course, places are limited, so make sure you get in because it is first in, best dressed.
That's you know, and there's different levels of that. But the whole point is, like, for me, it's getting to know yourself, getting to know how much you can give yourself. Because I think as women, we're always taught, like, you have to take everything away. Do less of that. Do less of that. Do less of that. Give this away to someone else. Give this away. But what about just more for me and watching it grow and just be about me living life better, having more energy, like all those things.
No, it's funny, like, I don't often share my story that often around anorexia because for a while I thought, oh, I don't want people to think, you know, I'm glorifying anorexia. But then I'm like, no, I glorify recovery.
Yeah.
I glorify what's on the other side of letting go of these rules, these rigid rules that keep you small, that stop you from being your best self, from stop you from living life, from stop you from being able to actually see what the hell your body could do. Your body is an amazing machine. And if you start to nurture it and feed it with fuel and get adequate sleep and laugh and play and be curious and collect all this data, you will be absolutely amazed at what you can do. But you have to change the rules, right? It has to be, how do I outperform myself every week? And outperforming isn't just about more load or more reps. It's better technique, right? It's managing your food. It's meal timing. It's improving sleep. Right? With all this information that we want to gather about ourselves, what are we going to do with it? This is what I say to my clients. With all the information that you know, the challenging stuff, the parts of you that you're trying to work through, you know, your strengths, your weaknesses, the wobbly bits, take all of that information and don't judge it, but go, what am I going to do with it? Like, how can I support myself with all of this wonderful information and I'm going to keep learning about me? Like, the greatest relationship that you will ever have, the most empowering relationship that you'll ever have, is the one with yourself. It sets the tone for everything else. It ultimately shapes your experience of life because we don't live life out there. We live life in here. You know, and until you really recognize that, until you recognize, like, where am I spending my time? What language am I using myself? How do I set my day up? Where's my me time? How do I love myself? How do I love others? I always say we've got two hands, one for helping ourselves, one for helping others. Right? That's why we have two hands. It's not just to give over here and it's not to be tied behind our back, right? With all this information that we're going to learn about ourselves, we can do something with it. That's what makes us powerful. It's not someone else. It's us. It's our choices, right? And our choices get us somewhere if we do them over and over and over again. Not what we do once, what we repeat.
Exactly right. It's getting up and doing it every single day.
Yeah.
And those self practices, like, I've been really committing to doing morning pages and journaling every morning. Yeah. And when you, even marking that down in my data when I started that and watching how much more willing I am to train, how much more willing I am to show up in other ways of my life. You know, you're always... I think it's really important to use that data to expand in all ways of your life.
Track data, not feelings.
Yeah.
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 Don't let feelings be the driver, right? Don't let fear be the driver either. Don't let fear be the decision tree, right? We don't grow from fear. Like, we go from overcoming fear, right? We can experience it. But most of the time we fear something because we haven't prepared ourselves enough. Mm-hmm. We haven't done something that's new. It's like, okay, what do I need to learn? Again, what do I know about myself? Well, I don't know much about this thing. Okay, maybe I should ask for help. Maybe I should get a coach. Maybe I should do some research. Where am I going to start? What can I do, right? A question I always ask myself in really challenging times, whether I'm injured, something hasn't gone to plan, I'm always like, all right, what can I do? What can I do and what am I willing to do? Because sometimes they're two different things. You know, so sometimes when we feel lost, right, we don't feel empowered, we feel disempowered and we're like, oh my God, the world's ending. It's like, it might feel like that for a second, but if you ask yourself, what can you do? You'll find a way to take action. And when we take action, we kill anxiety, right? Overwhelm is just anxiety. So a really powerful question that you can ask yourself. If anyone's listening here and you're feeling overwhelmed or you feel stuck, we can get unstuck by asking ourselves, all right, well, what can I do? What is the one thing that I can do? All right. One action often leads to another, right? And that builds momentum. Momentum builds motivation. Now, something that you said just before was discipline. And you love that word because discipline comes from disciple, which I also love as well. But a language or a word that I use even more than discipline is devotion.
Mm.
And I ask myself, how can I be devoted to myself for the rest of my life? And the reason I love the word devoted is because when you're if you think about what's something that you love more than anything in this world?
My daughter.
Your daughter. Well, I bet you're going to be devoted to her for as long as you can be, for the rest of your life. And devotion, she's like soft at times, but she's firm, right? It's like you hold your daughter to a standard that you know she's capable of. And sometimes when she doesn't lift that standard, you don't say, oh, that's okay. You say, hey, I'm noticing that you're doing this, but you told me that you want this. And I love you enough to step in and say, hey, I'm going to put you in this direction. And so that's what I love about devotion, because it's love, it's nurture, it's compassion, but it's a high standard, right? It's a standard that we set for ourselves. And I have a saying, a high standard without self-compassion just becomes self-bullying. And that's what I was for the first 5 years of my career. I had an incredibly high standard, but I had no compassion. So I just bullied myself. And it got me so far, but it didn't get me to being a world champion. It was the opposite. And when I became a world champion, what did I do? Became a bully again. And I, lost that self-compassion and I had to build it up again. So I love the word devotion, and I ask myself every day, how can I be devoted to myself? What does devotion today look like? And it is doing hard things. It's doing what I said I would do. And when I make a mistake, I ask myself, how could I do better? What did I learn today? When something feels hard, how can I feel joy in the challenge? Right? I had a really tough time at the beginning of this year, and I was just like, oh, I was like, how do I get through this? It wasn't how do I avoid this. It was how do I get through this? How do I work through this? Right? And I really had to pull upon all the things that I say about myself. Now, here is the time that you exercise these tools. Here is the time that you're going to build some character. And remember, hard times build character, but they also remind us how bloody resilient we are. And it also opens us up to resources, whether it's internal or external.
Mm-hmm.
Do I ask for help? Who's supporting me? How do I support myself? Right? These are all questions that help prompt us take action in some way.
Do you think bodybuilding is a good motivator for people getting into strength training? Who would you, encourage? Or if people were thinking, I want to bodybuild because that's going to motivate me to be healthy.
Well, if the intention is to be healthy, of course it's healthy. Intention is everything. You'll hear me say that over and over again. I love bodybuilding. I find bodybuilding very spiritual because I like to learn about myself. I did things wrong in the beginning. I did what I thought was right at the beginning. And turns out there was better ways. And that was a part of my journey. But the thing that I learned was if I do this thing enough with intensity, I'm going to build something, right? If I do this thing enough, I'm going to go somewhere. And we learn like how to be uncomfortable. Like training is meditation in motion. It's not 15 reps. It's one rep 15 times, which means this rep gets attention. This rep gets attention. And it you practice being present. Mm-hmm. It does teach present moment, right? It does teach you to be here right now in your body. And this feels uncomfortable, but this is where the magic happens. So I think bodybuilding, we can learn so much about ourselves through bodybuilding if the intention behind bodybuilding is to be better, is to build, is to grow, is to evolve. Strength training for me changed my life. Mm. When I met Sebastian Orib, he's known as Australian strength coach in online. He introduced me to strength training. And strength training meant that I had to show up and I had to outperform myself by being a little bit stronger than the week before. And I also had to practice one skill, squat, perfect squat, perfect squat, perfect squat. And so it was like, it blocked out all the noise around me and I just had to be there. And instead of looking at my body being like, oh, have I, you know, built enough muscle or am I, you know, lean enough? It was like, how do I outperform myself? What does my nutrition look like? I even had pre-lifting rituals. I'd put certain music on in the car because it was the same music that I was going to hear when I went to training. And I would feel my nervous system start to like get a little bit nervous because I was like, how do I set myself up for being as strong as I can, as strong as I can be today? And so strength training specifically changed my world because it was all about being stronger. It wasn't necessarily about more volume, but I learned to combine bodybuilding, the sport of bodybuilding, because I was a fitness model, with how can I be the strongest fitness model I could possibly be. I wanted to step on stage knowing that I was stronger than every other girl on that stage. Now, I didn't really know that was true, but I knew if I showed up being as strong as I could be, well, I knew that I was honoring this goal that I had for myself.
Hmm.
You know, so the thing about building your body, and you said this before, you wanted to go through the challenge of building muscle because in the past you hadn't built as much muscle as what you thought you had. And the truth is we have to learn patience in bodybuilding, but we want to learn to outperform ourselves. So while we're building our bodies, focus on getting as strong as you can. Skill acquisition, right? Learning skills of how to squat and deadlift, like really challenging, you know, lifts that will empower us, because what do we have to do? We have to tune in. We have to learn how to be better at that skill if we want to be lifting double body weight, right? And double body weight for reps. And we get on that bandwagon. I think in a build where we become challenged because, you know, especially for females, we've always been taught to eat less, get, you know, skinnier, leaner, blah, 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 shred for summer. Now we're doing the opposite. You know, the bodies that we see on social media with these, you know, big glutes or big shoulders or whatever it is that you like, big quads. Well, the only way to build them is to go through a building phase. And it challenges what we've always known, which is to the scale to go up, the measurements to go up, for our clothes not to fit anymore, right? And we all say we want it, but when we go through it, we're pretty challenged by it. So something that I always, you know, prompt with clients and myself is get strong. Get strong, focus on outperforming yourself, and you will be growing muscle over the months.
It's so important to me as well, because when I started in the fitness industry, I was a fashion model. So
really?
I was so skinny.
Really?
And I was really out of my body. Because to be that lean, you have to go through hunger. And you have to leave your body to be able to go through that pain of being hungry. And then I realized that all the exercise I was doing, all the running, all the cardio, I was out of my body, completely out of my body. So fitness was a really spiritual practice for me too, because it helped me get in my body. And I actually learnt about fitness properly when I quit modeling because I was too hungry. I was on this job once. I was so hungry and I asked, is there going to be catering on this job? And what the assistant brought me a block of chocolate and I was like, is that it?
How funny.
And then I went for another casting and I just started getting into weight training and I got told that I was too muscly and I was like, are you kidding? I'm not muscly at all. And I just had this epiphany, like, this is really fucked up. This is so fucked up, this place. It's really interesting you say that for me. Training to me is a spiritual practice because it is completely being with yourself. When you're thinking about fully irradiating all the muscles that you need to be able to take the weight, to even accept the weight before you push it, you have to be so inside yourself and so focused. Like it's it's quite a, yeah, it's a very spiritual experience, I find.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of women have had a trainer to take them through that so they can understand that.
Yeah. I mean, conditioning to burn more. Yeah. Weight training isn't about burning calories. You don't actually burn that many calories in weight training. It's there to build your body.
Yeah.
It's there to, you know, you want tone. Well, you got to create muscle to have tone. You know, all these, you know, words that we use, girls, you know. And if you think about it, training is the only hour of your day or hour and a half of your day or 45 minutes of your day that is purely dedicated to you or should be dedicated to you. Like, you're building, or you should be building your body. I shouldn't say should. Everyone's different. But for you. I know I build my body for me. When I show up in the gym, all I care about is how do I give the best that I can today? How do I walk away going, I did better than last week? Right. And that's radical responsibility. Right. And so that hour that you're in the gym is dedicated 100% to you. That is your investment to your future self in that moment, present moment, and to the future. So how you show up counts. What you do counts. And learning to be so present in that moment, you know, giving that one rep every time, learning to be uncomfortable, realizing that this is just temporary pain, right? That allows me to build this body that I say I want. It takes work. It's not easy. Like, building muscle is simple, but it's not easy. Fat loss is simple, but it's not easy, right? Otherwise, everyone would be doing it. I wouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have a job, you know? So it's an interesting concept.
It is. Mm. Speaking of your job and your new program, mm-hmm. Flex Method, it sounds Flex so Method. Cool. I've been listening to all your videos and
thank you.
Podcasts, and it sounds awesome. Tell us about it.
So Flex Method is my new coaching business with my partner. And we came together because we wanted to be able to help more people, more lifestyle people. We deal with a lot of athletes, and athletes are very niche. Not everyone wants to do what we do, but there are pieces that we can take from being an athlete and we can incorporate into lifestyle, you know, and we know that there's not one size fits all approach when it comes to nutrition, which is why we said, well, we have flexible methods. What's your lifestyle? What do you enjoy? You know, we talk about training morale. You do something you love, you'll do it forever. So what kind of training do you want to do? Your nutrition, what's the best diet? The one that you're going to stick to long term. And something that I always talk about in my Flex Method community and coaching is diet doesn't have to be a dirty word. Diet is just your way of eating. It's your nutrition philosophy, right? It's not what you eat. It's how you eat. How do you want to eat? Sure, we need to incorporate micronutrients. There's an importance in micronutrients for longevity, for health, for sustainability, for energy, for rebuilding our muscle, our tissues, for brain function to optimally function. But we also are human beings where we want to eat out, right? Well, we want to have a little bit of chocolate. I eat chocolate every day, right? We want to be social. We wanted to teach you how to eat the foods that you love while building the body that you love as well, right? When we love what we do, we put effort in what we do. Right? Something you've heard me say on this podcast is find joy in the challenge. Well, to build your body, you have to train hard. So if you're loving the type of training that you're doing to build your body, what are you going to put in? Effort. So our biggest thing is teaching our clients that there's more than one way to skin a cat, right? If you love what you do, you'll do it forever. How do we, you know, push intensity in our training? How do we outperform ourselves? How do we learn to be that little bit better each week, each day, each month, every year? How do we learn to incorporate all foods into our diet just in moderation? Okay, how do we live the life that we want to live and have the body that we want? Well, this is what we call Flex Method, right? And it's a community of like-minded people all supporting each other, all encouraging each other to be the best. And Coben and I, every week, we do weekly calls with the community, with the family. I always call them my family, so that we can educate you along the way.
It's really cool. It's really exciting. How is it living with someone who is the same sport as you, the same profession as you? What is that like?
You know what? So it's, I love him. It is so fun. We have so much fun together. And my previous partner before that, he was an ex-rugby player. So he trained, but he wasn't into bodybuilding. It was very different. And so I always did my preps on my own. You know, I've always been very independent. And then obviously meeting my partner now, Coben, who's a bodybuilder. We did our first prep together in 2020 and everyone was like, oh my God, how is it? And I was like, this is so fun and so easy because we're so radically responsible for our own goals.
Yeah.
And we're very self-aware. And like I've been competing for 13 years. Competing is easy for me. It's hard, but it's so easy. And so it was easy. We'd walk together. We'd prep our meals. If some person was tired, we would help each other out. Like it was so enjoyable. We had to learn to communicate in different ways towards the end, because obviously, so for anyone that's listening here, if you're ever going to date a bodybuilder, just know that their sex drive disappears when they reach a certain amount of body fat. A lot of women experience the same thing. They'll lose their sex drive when they get really lean. I personally don't. So that was a very hard challenge for me. But we learned to communicate and be affectionate in other ways. So it was a really beautiful bonding experience for us. And I really loved prepping with him. And I really love being on this journey with him. We currently train together 3 times a week. And because we know each other so well, you know, it's that devotion. You know, when he shares his goals with me, I say to him, just so you know, I'm now invested in that. So when I see you not aligning yourself with the goal that you set, just so you know, I'm going to pull you up on it. And it's the same for me. So I know when he knows that I can do better, he holds me to that accountable. When I know that what he can do better, when I know what his standard is of himself and he's not aligning with it, you know, I hold him to that standard. And so we have this really beautiful relationship of being out each other's cheerleader, but also being each other's, you know, kind of supporter in the way it's like, hold on. Does that align with the future goal that we have or that you have? And it's been really fun training with him. I'm a 60 kilo woman. He's 120 kilos.
You're so different in height. Yeah.
I'm 5'1" or something, 5'3", you know, and we train together and, you know, it works because we know how to push each other, you know, and I always say to him, if you know I can do better, tell me. Like I'm opening up myself to say, if you see something that I'm doing and you know I can do better, whether it's feedback and technique or push me a little bit harder, like tell me. Because all I want to do is continue to be better in every way. I never want to look back on life and be like, oh, I kind of half-assed that. You know, especially as I get older, I'm like, I've got no time to waste. I've got no time to waste. And I'm much older than him. So, you know, I've had a lot more experiences than he has, especially in competitive bodybuilding. So it's interesting to watch someone that's still, you know, quite new to bodybuilding navigate some of the challenges. And I could definitely say, you know, I track my nutrition more than him. I can't get away with what he can get away with. And, you know, I'm just like everyone else. If I didn't watch what I eat, if I didn't train hard, I wouldn't look like this. I just wouldn't. I'm not genetically blessed. I'm just a really hard worker. Mm-hmm. And I've just been working hard for a really, really long time. And I'm also not perfect, but I am fucking consistent. So I owe a lot of my success to consistency over time.
I love watching you too. Sometimes I see that you have a lot of joy when you're training together. You have fun. Yeah. And I love those videos you do too when Coben pushes away or you push away and then he puts all his weight on top and does the same exercise.
The hack squat. I always try and do half of what he does. Okay, let me try and do half of what you do. But as he gets stronger, his leaps and bounds, his strength increases. Are leaps and bounds of what mine are.
Oh, yeah.
So I still try and, you know, I try and give myself that extra standard to push on. But we did do walking lunges the other day and I did the exact same weight as him and I did more reps. And I was like, oh, baby.
Oh.
You're falling behind, doll. I was like, yes, I'm stronger than him in this part.
Do you think that's
it's always a competition?
It's always a competition. Oh God, I see. I'm so not competitive. That's probably one of my things why I'm not. I've never been an athlete. I love working with athletes, but I've never been an athlete, so I'm just not competitive enough.
Mm.
But do you think as well that is that because he's a man, or is it because you've got that much more training experience and you're at the top of your game that he's able to have those huge leaps in strength gains?
No, there's a number of things. He's enhanced, which is the first one. So yeah. He's not a natural athlete.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a male. So, yes, the jumps are going to be bigger, especially for the lower body. You know, especially, well, actually with everything.
Mm.
He's 27 and I'm 35. So he's in the prime of like maturing and testosterone and, you know, he has extra help. So his recovery is always going to be better than mine. His strength is always going to be better than mine. It's not that I can't get strong. It's not that I can't build muscle. It's not that I can't progress, but it would never be at the same rate as him. You know, so that's the thing. I can handle more volume over a week because females generally can, but that's because I'm not lifting as heavy as he is.
Right.
So it's always about the load. The load will determine recovery over anything else. So as he gets stronger, he needs more recovery.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's true. How did you choose to go natural? I mean, this is something we talked about before we got on, is the naivety. I was completely naive before I got into the fitness industry about how many people use performance enhancing drugs.
So was I.
And I think it's good to share with people because you look at people on Instagram and you compare yourself, but it's important to know the truth behind what you see.
The first is one, when I first started the industry, I really had no idea. I was I really didn't know about steroids or anything. And, you know, some people will say to me, why, you know, if you're not natural, why do you go in a non-tested federation? And I'm like, because non-tested federations get so much more hurrah. Like one, I love the look. Andre Brazier, who I thought was natural, and I would never know. I don't know her. So I'm not going to put any judgment on her at all. I don't know if she is. I don't know if she's not. But to me, I thought she was natural. And I thought, well, she can do it. I can do it. And I don't know. I just never been interested in being enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could see what I could do. Like some people say to me, you've got great genetics. And then I'm like, well, do I really have that great genetics? Because like when I look at how hard I'm working and I look at my DEXA scans, so I've been getting DEXA scans for 12 years and I've only put on 5 kilos, like no, not even 5 kilos. That's lying. Less than 5 kilos of muscle in 12 years because I lose muscle every time I go into an aggressive deficit, mm-hmm. right? So I gain a little bit and then I lose some. And so I'm only inching forwards like a couple hundred grams or like, yeah, not even a kilo, half a kilo. Like I'm not saying like I'll gain it and I'll lose it because that's what happens when you go, if you're going to get conditioned, it runs the cost at building, at losing muscle because the deficit is so aggressive in a comp prep. So we know that comp preps aren't healthy. But I just, honestly, I was so impressed with what I was doing naturally that I just never thought to go down that road. And look, I look at some of my girlfriends who have recently gone enhanced and I don't have anything against it. So whatever you want to do, everyone free to do what they want. But I look at the progress that they've made in a year and I think, Jesus Christ, like it takes me like 3 years to do what they do in 1 year, right? It's pretty, I get why people go down that road, but people don't maximize what they can achieve through doing just training and nutrition alone first.
Mm.
And the coaches that I work with and I chose to work with over the last 10 years, aside from Bass, so my nutrition coach and my other training coach, because I've got three coaches, they only work with natural athletes. So I went with people who knew how to optimize natural athletes. Because there's no point in me going to a coach that doesn't optimize that. Like I worked with a coach for 20 weeks, I think it was, or 24 weeks, 2020, just because I was just curious. He was coaching a friend of mine who's natural.
at the time. And he ended up leaving me. He ended up saying to me, look, Addie, I really love working with you, but you're not who I'm passionate about working with. He wanted to work with males and enhanced males. I was the complete opposite to that. And he literally makes a joke on social media. He's like, I literally broke up with Hattie because she was the opposite of who I like to work with. And I laughed that he's the only coach who's ever broken up with me. But and I learned a lot from him. But you know, I went back to my normal coaches who only really work with natural athletes, whether it's in the Commonwealth Games. So Tony Bataji works with a lot of athletes outside of fitness modeling, and then another guy called John Jack. And yeah, like my partner's enhanced and that's great and he can do whatever he wants. A lot of my friends are enhanced. All my clients are natural. I only work with natural athletes. I only know how to work with natural athletes. Mm-hmm. And women come to me because they want to do what I do. So I only know how to do what I do, right? I can only teach them what I know about what I do. And it just, yeah, I've just been able to achieve so many great things on my own naturally, you know? And like I said, out of 35 years that I've been on this earth, 27 of those years have been dedicated to intense training, whether it's from gymnastics or weight training. So I think to myself, well, what else am I meant to look like? You know, and if you think 27 years of intense training, like, you know, that's the thing. I'm like, all these coaches that are like, yeah, training and nutrition gives you this, but you don't believe what I do. I'm like, do you believe what you're teaching your clients then? Or is this or are you doubting what can be done? And again, genetics is a piece, you know, like I've been an athlete my entire life, you know, so that's why I just chose to go down that road. And I have no, as I said, everyone's free to do what they want. A lot of my friends are enhanced. They're impressive. They're amazing, but it's just not something that I've been interested in. Not yet anyway. So yeah, and I feel like I remember saying to myself when I was 28, I said, I will never keep competing after the age of 30. But when I was 29, I reached this level. Actually, maybe it was that year or the year after that I reached this level of a physique. And I was like, holy shit, like, this is amazing. And that whole year, all I did was eat, sleep, train, repeat, eat, sleep, train, repeat. And every year that I did that, my results, you know, they improved exponentially because I was so focused. And now I'm 35 years old. And I think, but I'm just getting started. Like I feel like I'm just scratching at the surface. Like I'm probably going to go downhill maybe in a few years, but my God, I'm going to do whatever I can in my power to keep improving my physique naturally as much as I can, keep learning. And, you know, I'll keep doing it till I don't enjoy it anymore, right? Or till I want to go down another path. People really underestimate what really hard training and great recovery and good nutrition done over and over and over again can do. There are some really great, phenomenal natural athletes out there. You just don't hear about them. You know, they just don't seem to have as much of an impact socially as what, you know, enhanced athletes do. And enhanced athletes are impressive. You look at the best in the world, far out. You cannot deny how impressive they are. And my partner and I were looking at this. He showed me this guy the other day and I said, oh, I wonder if he's natural. And we looked at his bio and it said 20 years old, natural. And we looked at the comments and people were like, as if you're natural. And I thought, if you're an exceptional natural, you're accused of taking steroids. If you're not an exceptional natural, no one cares about you. So it's like, what? It's so, the world that we live in is so bizarre. It's so bizarre. And I just thought, oh, this poor kid, he's 20 years old and I hope he's headstrong, but he was just the comments he was getting. And I was like, I really hope that doesn't steer his path. I hope he stays natural for as long as he can, because it is the human body, like I said, is amazing if you train it the right way. You know, when I say train the white, like you got to love it. You got to love it so much to look after it as well as push it through those intense bouts of training.
What is the, you've mentioned a few times the comp prep is unhealthy.
Mm.
How do you compensate for that? What's your advice?
Spend a lot of time in an off season.
Mm.
So a big mistake that a lot of, I always say females because I work primarily with females. Flex method is open to everyone, but it's lifestyle. It's not comp prep, but I only get girls ready for comp prep. And the mistake that happens with a lot of young girls, because, you know, fitness modeling is very glorified. It's glorified. And, you know, girls, they'll show their physique when they're feeling their best. But in order to look that best, it is an aggressive deficit. So a normal deficit that we might put a client through with fat loss, the highest will be like a 25% deficit. That's pretty much the top end that we do. A comp prep ends up being a 40% deficit. Like, it is so aggressive. Most women don't come in with the foundation of enough muscle and a strong enough relationship and a healthy enough relationship with training, exercise, their body just yet. It is something that needs to be learnt over time. And so to combat this, you know, a really aggressive deficit, you need to spend periods of the year, and I'm talking more than 4 months, I'm talking a minimum of 8 months of the year, in a calorie surplus, right? Mm. Or at least maintenance, right? Because where you have to take your body to go is aggressive. In my first probably 6 years of competing, I lost my period every year. I didn't have the muscle maturity to support the demands of comp prep. Mm. Give me another 6 years, you know, 6 years later, I get the 7% lean on DEXA and I still have a menstrual cycle.
Oh, her out.
I know.
That is amazing.
But I spend, you know, out between these bouts, I'm eating anywhere between, you know, 2,800 to 3,000 calories a day. And I'm training once a day. I'm not doing an absorbent amount of output. I'm doing the opposite to what I would be doing in a comp prep, because you have to balance it out over time. And as natural athletes, and this is what I have with my clients, is we have a 2-to-1 ratio. We spend double the amount of time in a calorie surplus than we do in a calorie deficit, right? So if they're doing a 24-week comp prep, which means 24 weeks or, you know, within that 24 weeks, there's 20 weeks of dieting, maybe 4 weeks of a diet break in there, because you can't just push. You have to push and pull. They'll be spending a year minimum in a surplus, right? So that year has to support this 6 months essentially of dieting. And then we have to go and we go back into that year. And you have to lay it like that, because you will not improve your body composition, your physique, you will not improve it without being in a calorie surplus and going into a building phase. And every time you do a building phase, you just add a little layer of a little bit more tissue every single time, because one building phase will not build your body, right? And you get to a point in the building phase where you have to eventually cut, right? You have to eventually, you will put on some body fat. It is normal. You, me, everyone, we all put body fat on, whether you're natural, whether you're enhanced. Everyone will put body fat on in a building phase. But how we minimize that, you know, as best as we can, is we control the variables that we can control, which is our nutrition, which is our training intensity, and which is our recovery.
You can take a lot, so much from this into your lifestyle clients, right? Because most of the women I've worked with don't know how to eat enough food for their needs.
Mm.
They know how to diet.
Mm. And most of the time they're dieting too aggressively.
Yeah.
I call it training enthusiasts versus athletes, is, and even athletes make the same mistake, is the mismatch between training output, nutrition intake, and the overarching goal, right? So a lot of girls say, I want to lose fat and build muscle. Well, you can't do both. You can't maximize both. So do one first. And then you need to match your training output, which is, you need recovery days. It's not training 6 days a week, certainly not 7 days a week. It's actually, when it comes to building muscle, you want a balanced ratio of work to rest. So for a long time, I used to do the 5-2. 5 days of weight training, 2 days of recovery. But these days, all my girls in a build, they're doing 4 days of work, 3 days of recovery, because that is a more balanced approach to the intensity and the recovery. And the intensity and recovery. And you will not build muscle without a recovery day. And I'm not talking about going and doing more exercise, because you have to cover the cost of that. The only way to build muscle is to give more calories to your body than what it needs to stay the same, because building muscle is so expensive and it's so slow, right? And so in the what's different, you know, when we lose fat, as you said, oh, I can measure that. That's so easy. I know exactly how much time I need to lose X amount of, you know, 4 kilos. In a build, it's not that. It's the opposite, right? And fat can accumulate a lot quicker than what muscle can. So how do we control this? Well, we control the variables, which is our nutritional intake, making sure that we are in a conservative, and I say conservative, surplus. We're training hard by outperforming ourselves each week. We're getting a little bit stronger or adding a little bit more volume, and we're increasing our total volume load, which is a key driver for hypertrophy. So your total volume load is your sets times reps times weight lifted. That has to be going up each week. And then we need recovery. We need good quality sleep, a minimum of 7 hours. More than that is better. More is better with that one. And then we need days of complete rest, because fatigue will minimize effort, right? When we're so fatigued and we go to train and it feels hard, that's going to mask the effort because it feels hard, not it's hard because I'm pushing hard. Does that make sense? So when we're always training and we're always tired and it feels hard, that doesn't necessarily mean you're actually working to your potential. You're working suboptimally because you're already fatigued. So you're better off having an extra rest day, managing your food to a maintenance day at least, and then going in the next day and training hard and pushing performance, because performance will drive muscle tissue when it's paired with adequate nutrition and wrapped up with sleep.
So amazing, isn't it? It sounds like so simple to us, the formula, but there's still so many women out there doing HIIT 6 days a week and eating 1,700 calories.
I know. That's just, honestly, I did a post on this yesterday. Oh, not yesterday, the day before, because I was like, you have no idea how many women I've spoken to today around this thing. And I was like, I've just got to make content on it, because I did that. I did that for so long and I didn't get anywhere, you know, and everyone will say, oh, my discipline in training's good. Well, it's not. You're not actually disciplined with training. You're controlled by it because you won't have a fucking rest day. So you're not disciplined. You're the opposite. Women, and I used to say this, but I love training. That masked the fact that I just didn't like recovery days because I didn't like how I felt on recovery days. And it wasn't until I recognized that I was like, this is not healthy. I'm unhealthy. I'm still driving unhealthy patterns. If I can't recover, if I'm not having rest days, I'm not recovered. You know, so that was a really big eye-opener for me. And now my thing is work so hard that you need your rest day. Work so hard that you like look forward to your rest day. And that's what it is now. I train 4 days a week. I do the least amount of training now than I've ever done in my whole life. And my body looks the best it's ever looked, because I recover now.
It's amazing, isn't it? All these poor women out there still flogging themselves, still, you know, this is what you said before. We don't burn calories in your workout. You don't, you know.
Look, we go through our own journey, right? We'll hopefully we learn.
Hopefully. Well, you're such an inspiration to me. And I hope people can hear that, like what I said before. I don't want to look like Hattie. I don't want to be like Hattie.
But and I'm not being inspired, offended by that at all.
But I'm inspired, you know, and I think this is important, like to look at someone and go, I'm inspired by that person. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you have to want everything that they have or be like them. I'm inspired by your commitment, your drive, your discipline, your tenacity, but also how down to earth you are about it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
And I'm really inspired that you're a natural athlete.
Thank you.
That's just
most people don't believe me. That's the heart. It's like, but I know who I am. At the end of the day, I say to myself, I know who I am. I know who I am. That people have worked who work with me and have worked with me know who I am, and people that have followed me for over a decade
No, I am. So it's often the people that just don't know me that accuse me that I can, and I say this all the time, I can't convince those who don't want to be convinced. I can only lead the way I want to lead. And at the end of the day, self-leadership is one of the most important things to me. So I hope for those of you who do want to stay natural, like, please reach out to me. Like, please, anyone. Like, I literally talk to everyone on my social media. It is me. It's not a bot. I literally give out free information. Oh, that's all I do. Like, that's half my job. I just give out free information all the time. If you're someone that is, you know, interested in natural bodybuilding, please reach out to me. If you're feeling like you need any help or, yeah, anything at all, I'm always available.
So beautiful. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed this chat. I hope everyone listening enjoys it as well. I hope it really inspires people to see the discipline in a different way, like not as a control, but as a beautiful learning process for yourself. And I hope that if you're struggling, spinning your wheels with training and trying to achieve too many things all at the same time, that you reach out to Hattie and talk to her about her flex method.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, darling.
I'm Lila Lutz, and you've been listening to The Body Never Lies. If you haven't yet, please go to your favorite podcast app and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. All the resources and references from this episode are waiting for you on my website, lilalutz.com. Just click on podcast and look for this episode. Now join me next week for another episode of The Body Never Lies. Thank you so much for listening. Free.